Welcome to Mom Talk Radio, the show that tackles topics important to you and your family. Finances, food, education, technology, and everything in between. We've got it covered on Mom Talk. Now, here's the host of the top-rated show for moms, Maria Bailey, on Mom Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mom Talk Radio. I'm your host, Maria Bailey. I'm here every week. Do you know that I have been here for 20 years every week right here on Mom Talk Radio, where we get to talk about some really great topics? We always try to find something that's relevant and up to date and just something that might be of value to you as a mom, because there's so many things that we have in our daily lives that become a challenge to us and much more. I want to thank our sponsor really quick, Premama. Premama is dietary supplements for expectant and new moms. And the great thing about Premama is from infertility to the time that you are a mom and you're tired and you just can't get enough sleep, Premama has powdered formulas that you can just mix right into your smoothie or to your orange juice. That prenatal vitamin that you can't swallow, well, guess what? It comes in a powdered form that you can just shake in a bottle of juice and drink it throughout the day and get all the nutrients for a healthy and happy baby. And you can go to drinkpremama.com to find out all about their products. Really phenomenal products, and you should check it out because they have more and more things that they are putting on the market to help moms like you and I. So Easter is right around the corner already. It seems so amazing that we just finished Christmas and already we are talking about Lent and what we're giving up for Lent and Easter and Valentine's Day. And I love the way like the sequence of the calendar year goes for all of us who watch our weight. So we make all of these New Year's resolutions. We're good for the month of January and maybe the first week of February. And then comes Valentine's Day. And we just know that our husband is going to give us Russell Stover or Whitman's or Hershey's or whatever they're going to give us. And so we blow it that week. And then the very next week is Lent this year, Ash Wednesday. So what do? We do Fat Tuesday, and then we give up food for Lent, thinking it'll help us lose weight. And then we're right there on Easter. And right after that, it's Mother's Day. So if you are already craving your Reese eggs, I've got mine in the freezer for Easter Sunday. It's the wax, you guys. It's the wax in the chocolate that makes those daggum things so good. But if you're already craving them, they're in the stores, and you can pick up a six-pack whenever you're picking up your milk and bread, because Lord knows they're already marketing those Reese eggs to us. We have a fantastic show lined up for you today, and when we return, we have Julia Clark. She is the author of Uniquely Wired, a book about autism and its gifts.
This is Mom Talk Radio. Mom's Little Secret, Mom Talk Radio with Maria Bailey.
You know, when you think of autism, sometimes you don't often associate it with the gifts that it gives to a family. But our first guest today, Julia Cook, is the author of Uniquely Wired, a book about autism and its gifts. With approximately 2 million books in print, Julia Cook is a former school counselor and teacher who never dreamed she would evolve into a national award-winning children's author, parenting expert, and inspirational speaker. She now travels around the world talking about this topic, and we are delighted that she has made a stop at Mom Talk Radio. So welcome, Julia, to Mom Talk.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. How are you?
Oh, doing great. So I actually have two nephews who have autism. They came from the same family, same mom and dad, boom, boom, 2 years in a row. They had children born with autism. And it made me wonder, is it becoming more common or is it more identified? Why are the rates seem to be rising in schools?
Well, you know, the statistics tell us that if you have one autistic child, your percentage of having another one with autism is 8% higher. Lots of times, you know, we don't know the cause, and that's the big mystery. But a lot of things that may be classified as something in the past as different are now fall underneath the autism umbrella. So you have more and more children diagnosed under the term autism, which very inappropriate term, would have been mentally retarded maybe in the back or in you know, past times. So it's kind of disturbing, the labels that we used to put on children. Now kids are being reclassified all the time, but there is an influx of autism in our society, and we don't know why. And it's not the kids all over the world.
Why would it matter to parents who don't have autistic children that there's a rise in the number in our schools?
I think knowledge is key when it comes to understanding behavior in everyone. And I think lots of times kids are judged and maybe excluded. And if you equip your children with empathy and acceptance skills for all different types of people, they are much better citizens in the world. And everyone's going to run into a child with autism. And what an amazing thing that is, because these kids see the world and hear the world so much differently than a typical kid. And there are so many things that you can learn from these kids, and about the brain and about the way things are viewed. And it's amazing.
And there's different stages of autism too, right?
Right. You have, you know, prevalent, and you have children that are, you know, on the Asperger's end of autism, which we don't necessarily, that's a different classification now. Children with Asperger's are not real high on social cues, but they have a lot of things that they are very much into, focused, hyper-focused on certain things, and they work differently. Their brains just work differently.
Right, right. And so what do we need to know about early intervention?
Early intervention is key, because the more information that you can, our kids, their brains are wired differently. So instead of being able to go from one part of the brain directly to another part, they have to almost go out of one channel and into another channel. And we can't change the physiological structures of the brain, but with intervention, we can teach our kids social response cues, so that when A happens, I should respond B. And if B happens, I should respond with C. And it gives our kids that social recipe to be able to react and understand how to react socially in situations. Mm-hmm. Our kids that are on the spectrum, they don't learn from watching other people. Like if a kid sneezes and then wipes their nose with a Kleenex, a child on the autism spectrum wouldn't look at another kid and say, oh, I'm supposed to do that. Those kids learn from when you teach them directly. You have to explain to them, and they're not going to be able to look at you and understand what you're thinking and feeling. But we can look at them and teach our children to look at them and understand what they're thinking and feeling.
If we have a child and we suspect that they have autism, what is it that we should, you know, be looking for, and how do we identify if maybe we need to talk to our pediatrician or doctor about it?
Well, kids that are on the spectrum, they don't react. They react differently to frowns and scowls. They have a little bit of a disconnect with others. They understand, they have less interest in others, and you expect them to respond a certain way emotionally to a typical situation, and they don't respond that way. They have delayed language development.
So, Julia, can you talk a little bit about the reasons behind some common autism behaviors, such as not making eye contact or repetitive body movement, and tell us a little bit about why those happen?
So when a child sees something a child on the spectrum sees something, they see it all at once, all the time, and they don't have a filter in their brain to process it. So when you look at a child and you're talking, you're also talking with your eyes, and they see 150% of what you're saying all at once. It would almost be like a flash of a camera in your face or a really loud honk of a horn when you walk by a car, and it's almost like a startling response. And some children with autism have unique behaviors that are done repetitively. Many of these are self-stimulating or stimulating. What it does is it helps them calm down and organize their thoughts and provide a sense of control. And they might appear to be disturbing to others or emotionally, you know, heartbreaking for parents. But every behavior that a child with autism displays has a reason. And if we can figure out the reason, then it makes sense. And we can also encourage our kids to have a greater understanding and accepting of this behavior.
Great. So we only have a few more minutes, and I just want to get one more question in here, and that is, why children's books? Why are children's books so effective at teaching kids valuable skills?
Children's books give kids a social recipe to respond to a certain situation. When a person has a hard time following instructions, if you do what the character in the book does, then you are doing all the right things to solve that problem. You know, we have so many things to teach our kids and so little time to do it in. And if you read a book to a child, you can get inside their head and they can connect with the character. And if the parent says it a certain way and then the actual parent does it the same way in the book, according to research, they're doing and saying all the right things. So all of my books are used by kids to know how to respond to certain situations. You know, if you're stealing, there's a book called Ricky Sticky Fingers. And if you're lying, there's Lying Up a Storm. And if you don't follow instructions, there's the worst day of my life ever. And you can identify so that kids can become their own problem solvers instead of expecting parents to solve their problems for them.
Really great tools in those children's books. And Julia's books are available through boystownpress.org. You can go there. You can find Uniquely Wired. And we have a link to it on Mom Talk Radio. Thank you, Julia, so much for being with us today on Mom Talk. And when we return, we're going to turn the spotlight on one mom who is focused on food allergies. And she's going to tell you everything she knows about food allergies and how you and your family can manage them.
Mom Talk Radio, a busy mom's best friend.
Today we're turning our spotlight on one mom who has a 13-year-old and a 16-year-old, but she is not more importantly than being a mom. She is also runs a blog called foodallergybuzz.com. She founded that in 2008, and since then she's been helping moms and parents everywhere manage food allergies. And her sister also has a blog, peanutfreebaseball.com, which was founded also in the same year. And just really good stuff that has to do with food allergies. So we're putting the spotlight today on Jennifer, the founder of foodallergybuzz.com. So welcome, Jennifer, to Mom Talk Radio.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
There have been times when I've been on an airplane and the flight attendants get on and say, we have someone on the plane with food allergies, therefore we're not going to hand out peanuts today. And you inevitably will hear one or two people sigh. Why is it so important that we recognize other people's allergies, particularly things like peanut allergies?
There are about 13 million people in the country who have food allergies. And I think the thing that makes it so dangerous is that there is no way to determine the severity of a person's possible reactions. So you have to consider that any reaction could potentially be life-threatening. And I think that is probably the thing that makes it most frightening to people. There's no way to know whether you're just going to have hives or whether that's going to be an anaphylactic life-threatening reaction. So you can imagine it creates a lot of fear for the people managing those allergies.
Right. So it seems like nowadays that, you know, there's all these restrictions on what you can send to your child's daycare or to the school as snacks because of people's food allergies. But yet, when I was growing up, it didn't seem that we ever knew that anybody was allergic to anything. In fact, it was probably you know, cool if you knew a kid who was allergic to something. Why is it that it's more mainstream now to know that there's children in your class that have allergies? Is it that we have more allergies, or it's just more publicized and well known?
I think it's a combination of both. The numbers of people who have food allergies has been on the rise for at least 10 years now. So you have about two or three children in every classroom on average who have food allergies. And also you're seeing people with more allergies. You might see a classroom where you've got children with fruit allergies, grape allergies, allergies to wheat, dairy, peanut. So it's a combination of both. And I think it's a really tough job for the schools to figure out the best way to manage all those different allergies in the same classrooms and in the same school.
Yeah. So what, tell me a little bit about your blog. What service and solutions and help do you provide parents on your blog?
Well, my blog is focused on food allergies in general. When I started it, there was not a whole lot of information available online at that point. What I could find was mostly about peanut allergies. So even though my child has peanut and nut allergies, I wanted to focus on all allergies because we all face the same danger, that is potentially life-threatening reactions and anaphylaxis. It's the same danger no matter whether you have a dairy allergy or soy or peanut or shellfish. So I tried to focus on I've tried to focus more on positive aspects rather than sort of dwelling on the fear aspect and the negatives and the restrictions. And I started out sharing as many allergy-friendly products as I could. And as the years have gone on, there have been more and more people with food allergies and more blogs on the subject. So now I'm focusing more exclusively on consumers who are managing food allergies, both parents and adults who have food allergies. And I also have the sister blog. That's my second blog, which focuses on accommodations at baseball games for mostly peanut allergy sufferers, since we have peanuts and baseball kind of go hand in hand.
What do parents need to know if they suspect that their child has a food allergy? What's the first step?
First thing to do is to get an appointment with a board-certified allergist. A lot of people do go to a pediatrician. They can test, but pediatricians are not experts in allergies. Allergists are.
Right.
Historically, there's been a problem with sort of broad panels of testing for all kinds of allergies, and a lot of times you get false positives. So if you go to an allergist,
right,
they'll take your medical history into consideration, and they can help determine whether there really is an allergy or not.
So find the right doctor, and to find more of the right answers, you can go to foodallergybuzz.com, where you'll find Jennifer and all of her information. Thank you so much for joining us today. We have a link to your blogs on Mom Talk Radio. And when we return, we're going to speak with one teacher who actually became a self-made millionaire. We'll find out how.
Radio, a busy mom's best friend. Now, Maria Bailey on Mom Talk Radio.
What if you could live your life like a millionaire? Well, we have our next guest who is doing just that. In fact, she has authored a book, Mind Over Money, How to Live Like a Millionaire on Any Budget. Her name is Timalyn Langland, and she is a public school teacher and a self-made millionaire. On a teacher's salary, which we know is not very much, she has traveled the world to places like Rome, Paris, Rio, and Hong Kong. And she is an avid tennis fan. She actually, on her measly teaching salary, had just went to the Australian Open, where she sat on the front row to watch the Williams sisters. She has built her real estate investment to include 8 multi and single family properties in LA, which you know is not an inexpensive market. And she has authored the book Mind Over Money. She's here to share some of her expertise with us today on Mom Talk Radio. So welcome, Timalyn, to Mom Talk Radio.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. So happy to be here with you all today.
Oh, well, thank you. So how in the world do you live on a teacher's salary and do the things that you do? Everybody, I'm sure, around you wonders that as well.
You know what I do? I get asked this question all the time, and I tell them I'm just very strategic with money. I determine what are the things that I value most, and that's where I start, you know, that's where the strategy comes in to putting, you know, we all have limited money. You're right, teachers don't make a lot of money, but all of us can just be effective with the money that we already have by stretching it and changing certain habits so that we can enjoy the things that we are most passionate about.
It sounds like you're passionate about travel and you're passionate about real estate investments. So do you, you know, if you say, I'm going to focus on what I'm passionate about, are you, you know, living frugally in the way you dress, the what you eat, how often you go out, on using coupons? Like, what does the rest of your life look like?
You know what? One of the biggest tips, and I share this in the book, is that one of the most expensive things is our cost of living.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I have done, now this is just what I have chosen to do. I've chosen at a very young age in my life when I was building my business and building my income, I made a conscious decision to live in a place where I didn't have to pay market value for rent. And that gave me the opportunity to save and put money aside. But you're absolutely right. There are so many different ways one can do that. And in the book, I give about 40 plus ways.
Wow.
For people to determine, okay, here are some of the things I can do right now to stretch the income that I already have and to feel the impact of an immediate raise by simply making some changes to the things you do every day and getting those items at a better price and at a less expensive price.
Right.
And so for me, I determined it would be rent. I did not want to pay high rent.
There you go. So
that was the key for me. And so by doing that, I was able to save for the things that I love the most. And even when I was on my quest to become this real estate magnate, I always traveled the world because living like a millionaire does not mean living a life of deprivation.
That's right. That's right. And you know what's amazing is sometimes we do these things subconsciously and we don't even realize it. And an example is travel was always very important to me and my husband for our family. And we have taken our kids all over the world. And I caught myself one day like looking at other people's homes and saying, gosh, I can't believe that they can live in a big house like that. And it wasn't until I realized that, we live in a very nice house, but we choose, it's our choice, not to spend more on our house because we're spending that money on travel. And once you kind of own it, then it feels so much better, I think.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. And even as parents and as teachers, we're modeling certain behavior for our students because over 90% of our spending habits are subconscious. And so what I've always done for my students, and I'm sure parents do as well, is that when you are looking at the bigger home or the bigger car that someone else drives or lives in and you decide, oh, I want this, I want that, your children are watching. And they're seeing how you make decisions along the way when it comes to those things. And they, too, will follow in your footsteps. So it's
How do you think that we, because sometimes as parents, we acknowledge the fact that we don't have very good spending habits, but we would like to create better ones in our children. So how do we do that with, you know, saying, okay, I'm going to break the cycle here and I'm going to do better for my kids. How do we teach them those better habits?
You know what? And I think we teach them by two ways. We model the behavior we would like them to emulate, and then we discuss the behavior we'd like them to emulate. And it's so funny. In preparation for this call today, I was reminded of a situation that happened when I was a little girl, and how my grandmother and my big mama would sit me down, for example, because she wanted to teach me to manage money more wisely, and she felt that there was a lesson that I needed to learn in terms of how to pay bills. So she would literally sit down with me and take out the stack of bills that needed to be paid. She would have me fill out the information on the check. I would fill in all the blanks, and then she'd sign it. And I thought about that. That's a powerful lesson. And not that she didn't have a conversation with me per se. Well, this is how you pay your bills. This is how you, make sure you get them in on time. But I learned that from just that activity alone.
Right.
And so I would suggest parents do the same. Whatever you want your children to learn, sit down with them and teach them.
Well, I want to teach everyone where they can find your book. It's called LiveLikeAMillionaireNow.com. It's available on all the big bookstores and retailers. We have a link to it on Mom Talk Radio. And I really appreciate what you're doing, because I do believe that finances and how to manage your spending is something that a lot of parents, we focus on so many other things, but because we're not comfortable with it, we don't teach it with our children. So congratulations to Malin for everything that you're doing as a teacher, and for your achievements too in becoming a millionaire on a teacher's salary. So we have a link to livelikeamillionaire.com. Thank you so much for joining us today, and we'll have to have you back to give us some more tips, especially as we go into the holiday season. You know, this show, we're going to do something really interesting. We have one more guest, and then we're going to turn our attention to our inbox on Facebook. Each week, a lot of you submit questions to me and just ask out of experience, what am I hearing from other moms? So after our next guest, we are going to go into the mail to answer some of the most asked questions on Facebook. But first, up next, we're going to be talking with a fitness trainer about what you need to know for your young athletes in your home.
This is Mom Talk Radio. Mom's Little Secret, Mom Talk Radio with Maria Bailey.
Our next guest has got a focus on something that is near to dear to my heart. That's conditioning and strength and all of the things that we need to prepare our young athletes. His name is Andrew Bosolino, and he is the Director of Operations and Strength and Conditioning Coach at Precision Sports Performance. He has got a long history of working with college athletes and now is bringing his expertise to us as moms and with high school and younger and grade level athletes. So welcome, Andrew, to Mom Talk Radio.
It's a pleasure to be here.
So let's start with the young kids. We have that four-year-old. It seems like it keeps getting younger and younger, that four-year-old or five-year-old, and we want to get them active. We want them to get in a sport. How do we choose the right sport for our child?
When it comes to sport at such a young age, whether it's 4, 5, 6 years old, it's mainly about getting the kids active, making sure that they're out on the field, on the court, maybe it's on the ice, someplace where they feel comfortable, and expose them to as many sports as possible. Because at such a young age, it's kind of hard to tell what a kid is really good at. It's hard to tell what a kid likes. And it's hard as parents to kind of push a kid at that young age into one specific sport because maybe the parent likes it or they played it growing up. But at that age, it's all about exposing the child to every different type of sport. Like I said, whether it's on the court and they're playing basketball, they're on the field and they're playing baseball or soccer, and then even on the ice, put ice skates on them, let them try ice skating and hockey and figure skating. And it's just getting that exposure to everything at such a young age so that when they become 9, 10, 11, 12 years old and they get into high school, they've already figured out what sports they like and what sports they want to go on and master at a higher level.
So that is a question that my husband and I debated with every one of our four children. And ultimately, actually, we have a son who coaches football for Ohio State now, and football was his thing. But we always debated, is it better, at what point do you have them focus just on one sport? And, you know, is there a benefit of playing two sports rather than one? So when do you make that decision?
That's another great question. When it comes to that, it's all about timing and how much time the kid has, and again, what they like. They might, at 8, 9 years old, love basketball and love lacrosse and love baseball, but then it gets to a point in high school where baseball and lacrosse are in the same season. So it's going to get to that point once they get into high school where they have to choose in the spring, do I want to play lacrosse for my school or do I want to play baseball? And that's the beginning part to kind of figuring out, okay, we're going to focus now on lacrosse. But then in that sense, now you've got 3 seasons, almost 4 with the summer. In the high school sports, you have fall, winter, and spring. And then through those sports, you kind of pick and choose which sport you want to play per season. And I'm always of the advocate of picking a sport that you love, that you're good at, but at the same time making sure that you're focusing on that sport as well as another. And even at, if you're a fall athlete that's playing soccer or football, and then you're a spring athlete that's playing lacrosse or baseball, the things you're doing during the fall season will aid you to be better in the spring season. So,
and what about conditioning outside of just the practices? Why is that so important?
So what we do here at Precision, that's one of the things we do. The kids, when they're at practice, they focus on that skill of the sport, whether it's baseball and they're learning how to hit, they're learning how to field, or football, they're learning how to tackle, and they're learning how to run plays. What we do here is we help kids learn how to use their bodies more efficiently. We teach kids how to use their bodies properly, whether we're teaching them how to squat, whether we're teaching them how to run in a straight line properly and more efficiently. All that stuff then leads out onto the field, so now they're a more effective football player because now they know how to sprint more effectively, more efficiently. By teaching kids how to use their bodies properly, whether it's squatting or doing a simple lunge motion, it's going to help them out on the baseball field, learning how to hit and use their hips and use their bodies more efficiently and more effectively, and in turn turning them into a better athlete. And these things that we do inside of here, again, aid the things that they're doing out onto the field, so then now they're less likely to be injured. They're more efficient using their bodies. They're more powerful. They have an awareness for their bodies, and as they age, their bodies change. So now continuing up with the outside of practice and game situations, it's now teaching them how to use their bodies during those growth phases as well throughout their body.
So if our listeners go to precisionsportsperformance.com, they will find information about all your services. And you just have such we could be talking for an hour with you, from finding a college scout to video packages that you can put together. You just have a wealth of information, and I would really encourage everyone to go visit precisionsportsperformance.com, particularly if you have a sports-minded child or maybe one that you would like to become more sports-minded. Thank you, Andrew, so much for being with us today on Mom Talk Radio. Really great information, and I appreciate your time today. And when we return, we're going to actually turn our attention into our Facebook group and pull out some of the most asked questions that you've submitted. I'm going to take a shot at answering them.
Mom Talk Radio, a busy mom's best friend.
So we're going to do something a little different today on Mom Talk Radio. We actually get such great questions and comments from you, our listeners, on our Facebook page and through Twitter. You can submit them, I tell you all the time, at Mom Talk Radio is how you follow me on Twitter. And so I thought, you know, if one mom is asking this, then two moms probably need the answer. So we've dug into our Facebook group and pulled out some of the best questions or most frequently asked questions. And I thought that I would just pull them out and we'd talk through them and give you the answers that maybe you're looking for. They are for moms with children of all ages. So let's just start with the first one. having four college students, what is the best advice you have for moms with high school kids approaching the college application years? Oh boy, do I have some experience on this one. So here are some of my go-to advice when it comes to the college application years. Number one, if you have a sophomore in college, regardless of how many times your school will have them take the SAT or ACT during the school day, I highly recommend that you begin having your child take the standardized test in the spring of their sophomore year. And then every time possible, if you can afford it, through their junior year. The reason being is a lot of parents don't have their kids take it until the end of their junior year or the beginning of their senior year. But what happens is both of those tests are only administered once, maybe twice, before December of your senior year. So that means really you only have one or two shots at getting the best score you can. The good thing about these tests are they actually take the best scores and combine them. So if you do really well on math on one test, and let's say 3 months later you do really great in English, they will take the really best score in math and put it together with the really good score in English. So it's worth your while. Why is it worth your while? Because what colleges don't tell you is they put a lot more emphasis on those standardized test scores than they lead you to believe. So don't get all the way down the path of trying to get your child into your dream school or their dream school, only to realize that you missed the cutoff by 10 points or 11 points or whatever it is. And I can tell you, my kids hated me when I was signing them up for those tests, and they hated me the morning that they were going to take them, and they hated me when they were coming home. But all of them, now that they have gotten into colleges and are out of college, have said to me, "Mom, that was one of the best things that you ever did, was make us take those tests as often as frequently as possible." Because one actually said, "I regret having not done it more often, because I would have really liked to have gotten into my dream school rather than transferring in later on." So that's my advice for those moms. One mom asked me, "You have two children that serve the United States in some capacity." Yes, I have a daughter who is in the Peace Corps and a son who is in the U.S. Army. "What did you do as a parent to raise service-oriented children?" Well, I have to tell you, my son is being deployed to Afghanistan in 2 weeks, and there are moments, and my daughter currently serves in the Peace Corps in Cameroon, Africa. There are moments when I say, next time around, I'm going to raise selfish children, but because I could sleep better at night. But really, you know, within our family, it was always really important for us to do volunteer work. And we did it as a family. We did it not just for school requirements, but we all identified something in our community that we wanted to do. And as a family, we did it. And I like to believe that it was because we did it as a family, that that was just one of our family's core values that translated into how they wanted to serve out their, in their careers and their capacity later on in life. And, I just want to say one more thing about serving in the armed forces. And that is, you know what, take a minute today and teach your children that when they listen to the news, that those troops that are overseas, those are 18, 19, 20 year old kids who are over there. And somewhere there's a mom like me who's not sleeping because our children are fighting for our freedom. So please teach your children that important lesson, if nothing else, about service to our country. And with that, I want to thank you for listening to Mom Talk Radio. Thanks for being with us today. We'll be back at this exact place next week. And I'm honored to be here with you. And I have been for the last 20 years. So thank you for listening. And don't forget to download us on iTunes. We have a free app. You can listen to all our previously recorded shows. And we'll see you again next week. Thanks, everyone.